Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kurt Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for June 19th in the year of our Lord, 2017. This is our one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide. We're convinced the checks and balances put in place by our founding fathers are absolutely brilliant, and the solution to the great restoration, a peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome to the broadcast, folks. Hope you had an absolutely delightful Father's Day weekend. I know that I did. Absolutely tremendous. And we celebrate fathers. There's some news articles about that we'll talk about as the broadcast unfolds today. Now, we talked about the White House calling out Republicans for secret health care bill on Friday. Again, the Republicans will never learn. We elect them and they promise change and they just simply go back into their star chamber thugocracy and they run on an idea and then reject it the second we elect them. What a tragedy, folks, but it's happening again. Rand Paul saying if it doesn't go down with a complete repeal or at least a partial repeal, he won't vote for it. Good for him, but he's the only one standing up. But I am concerned that he's not blowing the whistle on the secret deliberations very well. All right, looks like Skittles. They used to have the rainbow Skittles, right? Now they only got white Skittles because they're trying to get rid of their rainbow to show solidarity with and support for the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender rainbow. They want the agenda to take center stage. What a tragedy in America, folks. We should stand with God's laws for morality. Also, Ted Nugent, believe it or not, is toning down his rhetoric. He says no more hateful rhetoric. A lot of the Republicans are toning it down after the shooting that took place at the baseball practice. But the Democrats won't. They're ratcheting it up. Don't know what goes on with that, but even the New York Times is now being forced to apologize for article rehashing false claims regarding Sarah Palin. Turned out that Sarah Palin, back in the election days of, I think it was 08 or something like that, basically created a map that showed crosshairs on election districts targeted for, well, her candidates to replace the candidates that were currently there. It was an election discussion. And the crosshairs were not on individuals, but on districts for replacement. A very peaceful idea. Well, the liberals belligerently said she's putting crosshairs on people. It's an akin to an assassination threat. And well, they lied. They got caught. They got shut down. But then they rehashed that lie just recently. And the New York Times told us when Donald got elected, their days of lying were over. Well, they lied then and they lie again. Sarah coming out in bold opposition to their belligerence. But it gets worse because the Huffington Post has an author by the name of Jesse Benn. And Jesse, literally, through Jesse Benn, failed to condemn the shooting that took place and advised future shooters to become more organized and therefore more effective attacks on conservatives and Trump supporters. So they don't condemn the shooting. They ratchet up the rhetoric. But it gets even worse. The Huffington Post had to retract another article they wrote that directly called for the assassination of President Donald Trump. Now, folks, I don't understand how come there's not accountability here. I get free speech, but when you threaten to assassinate the president or literally threaten to ratchet up and organize people that are, quote, future shooters, have you lost your mind? But this is what we see today. And they blamed it all on Donald for his violent rhetoric. Are you crazy? Donald has never said anything as extreme as assassinating the president of the United States and or encouraging shooters to continue. The Huffington Post has lost all credibility, and so has the mainstream press that don't call them on the carpet for this absolute double standard, psychotic belligerence that'll create copycat shooters. And I submit to you that at some point, it's hard to call rhetoric responsible for action, but at some point when you stir it up to that level, I guess a man was shot while driving in Indianapolis because he had a Make America Great Again sign on his car, and he had a flag. So they shot at him. See, these people are belligerent. In Charlotte, North Carolina, a woman went into Starbucks with a Make America Great Again Trump shirt on, and the staff at Starbucks literally abused her and harassed her. Yeah, they tried to deny it later, and people at the venue said, no, they lied, they did do this. After they got caught, now Starbucks issuing an apology. These people are crazy, folks. The New York Times using more unnamed sources as they attack the Donald and peddle fake news. Also, Ken Starr says there's no obstruction case. We reported that, but the mainstream press reporting that the Donald is under investigation. Well, now one of the lead attorneys for Donald Trump, his name is Jay Sekulow, he says there is no investigation. The mainstream press lied. There you have it, folks. And now there's more questions in the probe regarding Loretta Lynch. Will there be accountability for her actions meeting with Bill Clinton on the tarmac of that plane landing, huh? All right. The Department of Energy is closing its Office of International Climate and Technology. I guess they're letting go 11 employees. We're draining the swamp, but certainly not fast enough. All right. There's also a black college. It's called Missouri's Harris Stowe College. It's the state university there in Missouri. They must pay the white professor $5 million. Why? Because the college was racist against him. That's why. Wow. Al Gore claims God wants us to fight global warming. It's amazing when Al Gore refers to God. That's rare that a politician does that. But I guess in this case, it's okay if you want to promote your global warming lies. And he lies about God, too. I guess the number of distressed retailers is even higher than it was during the financial crisis, writes USA Today. Amazon buying Whole Foods in a deal over $13 billion. Wow, $13.7 billion. It'll change the grocery industry as we know it. We'll break that down someday. Why are we taxed so much, asks Bill Federer. It's a fair, great question. The Republicans say they're going to take on tax reform before the July 4th recess. My response, don't count on it. They talk big but get nothing done. What have they even accomplished since they got elected? Donald's done some tremendous things. They've literally done nothing as far as I can tell. That was hour one of Liberty Roundtable Live on Friday. Hour two, we had our guest on Richard Mack at CSPOA.org and thefreedomcoalition.com. And we talked about Donald Trump orders government to stop work on the Y2K bug, I know, 17 years later. Yeah, we're literally spending money on the Y2K bug 17 years later. Donald is cleaning up some of the fiascos going on in government. Whether he's doing it fast enough is up for debate, but good for him. That should have been done years ago. And I guess the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and questioning or queer group, whatever you call it, I don't know what Q stands for. I guess the legal group spends $25 million to put Washington, D.C. offices together. So they're going in and coming after the Donald. So Barack moves to Washington, this gay, lesbian, bisexual legal term or legal organization spends $25 million to get into D.C. Everybody's going after the Donald, folks. All we need is love and deportations, writes Ann Coulter in a very interesting article. We also talked about the Southern Baptist Convention met last week and came out with an against alt-right. They voted to condemn alt-right racism and any kind of racism. Now, I condemn racism too, folks, but the problem that I have with this is, again, when you say an alt-right is a racist, you start to cast these general ideas. Somehow the Southern Poverty Law Center has gotten to the Southern Baptist Convention, and what they're falling into is the trap of whenever things go wrong for the liberals, they pull out the race card. If you don't agree with them, you're a racist. And sadly, the Southern Baptists have fallen for this lie because most of their members, people sitting in the pews, believe it or not, are white. Now, I don't believe they're all racists, and it's good to condemn racism. What's bad is to fall into the trap calling everybody a racist without evidence or proof or anything else. A racist is a modern term that's really undefinable. What is a racist? Right? I mean, David A. Clark Jr., our black Democrat sheriff in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, they call him a racist all the time. Why? Because he stands with conservatives on traditional values. Black Lives Matter, are they a racist organization? What if you had White Lives Matter? You see, the double standard is so evident, it's shocking. Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center has literally gotten to the Southern Baptist Convention on this one, where they're just literally calling everybody a racist. I mean, it's crazy. All right, Megyn Kelly and Alex Jones had their interview last night, and Alex Jones leaked audio recordings about it. Megyn not doing too well. She's getting beat up on all sides with regards to that. And last but not least, they had $240 billion in taxes collected. And they collected record taxes in May, but still run an $88 billion deficit up there at the government. They got to reduce spending, Donald. You're not doing it fast enough, brother. Liberty Roundtable live in seconds.
Break the bond of Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Campaign for Liberty's Lowell Nelson with us. Welcome back, my friend, and a happy Father's Day to you and your family, sir.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. It's really good to be back with you.
Before we kick into the mix, do you want to make a comment or two about Father's Day?
Well, it's absolutely a wonderful day to, and I use this day to pay tribute to the founding fathers, my own father certainly, my heavenly father certainly, but also our founding fathers. But you know, Sam, the topic I've chosen today really probably better fits for Mother's Day. I want to talk about one of the most remarkable women of the 18th century. We'll get into that, I'm sure, a little bit later, but that's how I'm celebrating Father's Day, Sam. I just want to talk about a woman who had a huge impact on the formation of and early days of our American, of the United States in the early colonial period.
All right. Before we get into her really quick, though, I just want to tell you Father's Day, believe it or not, is important. In fact, fatherhood tops list of most important duties for males. There's a new poll that's posted. It's by Jake Ranney. They say in a world full of uncertainty, there is absolutely a consensus that fatherhood is the most important duty in a man's life. According to the latest, it's a Rasmussen poll, 70% of Americans believe that fatherhood is the most important role for a male. That is startling. And that's why the mainstream press is, you know, mocking of, manipulating of, and the TV and the Hollywood and everything else, they're mocking of fathers is so egregious. Americans realize how bogus that is. And Americans realize that fatherhood is one of the great keys to success in the home, for the family, the fundamental unit of society. And so I just want to bring this up because, you know, most people believe that, oh, nobody cares anymore. The traditional family's out. No, 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 no. Rasmussen just proved that 70%+ of Americans believe that fatherhood is the most important role a male can play. Isn't that tremendous? And it just goes against what you hear everywhere.
Exactly, Sam. I find that very encouraging and restores, you know, sometimes we get involved in political battles and so forth, and we see the way the culture is going. We see popular pop culture, Hollywood trends and so forth, the lives of the rich and the famous, and we become a little bit discouraged sometimes. Well, absolutely disappointed, obviously, in the direction they're going, and discouraged in some degree because of that, this slide toward Gomorrah, so to speak. But then someone a poll like this comes out, and it just restores my faith in the American people. We have so many good, wonderful people throughout this United States, Sam, all over the world, really, and we're not reminded often enough of the good that good men and women are doing throughout our country and throughout the world. And this poll just serves to strengthen and rebuild and rekindle and rejuvenate our faith in one another, Sam.
And you got to leave it up to Liberty Roundtable Live, ladies and gentlemen, to point this out. The mainstream press should be talking about this everywhere, but no, they can't get it done because they have a subversive agenda towards the freest country on the face of the earth, and we simply do not. We stand for fatherhood, we stand for motherhood, we stand for the sacred cause of liberty, and we absolutely unequivocally defend God, family, and country, and submit to you that family is the fundamental unit of society led by a father and a mother. That is not a one in charge of the other scenario, but as co-equals with not divisionary but complementary roles, they stand at the head of the sacred God-ordained institution, and if we absolutely adhere to that institution, we will have liberty and safety and freedom and prosperity, and I could go on forever. Let's not back away from this reality, folks. Let's stand boldly, nobly, and independently, Lowell.
Absolutely right, Sam. I was just going to add that the solidarity of the family allows mothers and fathers to be more involved civically and more able, more free to be upstanding citizens of their communities, right? I mean, if you have a broken home, say mom doesn't have a husband or a husband doesn't have a wife, and they're having to take care of their family, they're having to work for their bread that they eat, they are less able, right? I mean, they're so almost overwhelmed with the mere duties of life to provide for their own families and to provide for themselves that they really can't take a leading role in the preservation of the rights and liberties that you and I hold sacred. I mean, it's very difficult. I mean, some do, obviously, but it's very difficult. And therefore, it's such a blessing when you have a family, a husband and a wife, who are pulling together, yoked equally, and pulling together, raising a family together in the nurture of God. And then they have time to reach out and strengthen their communities, be involved civically, and make good things happen for their in their neighborhoods.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. So we talk a lot about the founding fathers, and boy, do they deserve credit. And boy, do they deserve our efforts to restore the greatness they put in place, because they focused on God, family, and country. They focused on the protections of life, liberty, and property. We don't give enough, in my opinion, coverage of women doing the same. And Lowell, I'm going to flip-flop your topics for a second.
Sure.
I want to get into this one. This one's critical. Chris Ann Hall, well-known talk show host on LibertyNewsRadio.com and other places. A good friend of ours as well. She's a public speaker on all things Constitution and more. She speaks out in defense of this wonderful woman. And Lowell wants to highlight this, and boy, do we agree. Lowell?
And it's partially because of Chris Ann Hall that I'm doing this. I've listened to her several times praise this wonderful woman, Mercy Otis Warren. And so when the New American came out with an article this month or this week called The Formidable Female, and it's all about Mercy Otis Warren, I felt like, you know what? There are a lot of people who, like me, really don't know the story behind Mercy Otis Warren, and it would do us well to review her life, the contributions that she made to the cause, the sacred cause of liberty. You know, oftentimes, Sam, I'm on this a radio show and I'm calling people to action. I'm saying, look, we got a huge problem over here. Please join me in helping to solve this problem. Well, today I just want to do not a call to action, but just I want to talk about this wonderful woman, and by doing so, hopefully inspire our listeners to be like her in many ways. And because of our you know, people who listen to this radio show wanting to be more like Mercy Otis Warren, it will make a big difference in the cause of liberty, because with greater conviction we'll move forward in this sacred cause of liberty. You know, she was the first American woman playwright. She actually wrote Shakespearean-type plays in the form of satire, which, you know, to poke fun at the British politicians and encourage the liberty movement. And so just to give you a taste of how skillful and an inspiring writer she was, Sam, I just want to quote part of a preface to a play. She wrote a play, one of the most famous plays she wrote was entitled The Ladies of Castile, a brilliant play, really. But in the preface of this play, she included a letter that she wrote to a young gentleman in Europe, and I quote, "The nations have now received the sword. The European world is hushed in peace. America stands alone. May she long stand, independent of every foreign power, superior to the spirit of intrigue or the corrupt principles of usurpation that may spring from the successful exertions of her own sons. May their conduct never contradict the professions of the patriots who have asserted the right so human nature, nor cause a blush to pervade the cheek of the children of the martyrs who have fallen in defense of the liberties of their country." End of quote. So you can tell from this passage how beautiful she writes, and how much of an inspiration she was to the people of her day. She was born in 1728 to a prosperous and pious family. Four generations before her birth, back in 1630, so basically 100 years before she was born, one of her grandfathers, James Otis, he came to America. And he set out immediately to establish a reputation as a hardworking man with a rock-ribbed devotion to his faith. And because of his great efforts and his great work, the Otis family did achieve a measure of wealth and prominence there in the state of, or the colony of Massachusetts. And so Mercy was steeped in this tradition of hard work and piety, which really was a great hallmark of her and her family. One of the great historians, Lester Cohan.
All right, hold on. We'll hear about one of the great historians, about this wonderful lady, a freedom fighter to say the least, in seconds. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, our guest. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live on your favorite News the Networks Refuse to Use talk station.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
With Liberty News this hour, I'm Dennis Daly. Occupational licensing is taking a hit. As you may have heard earlier this month, New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu signed legislation to legalize natural or African-style hair braiding. Anyone in New Hampshire can now have braided hair without government permission. In Tennessee, a government license no longer needed to do something as mundane as shampooing your hair. Occupational licensing has increased fourfold since the 50s. 25% of American workers now need a license to go to work. At many jobs, most people didn't think you needed a permit to do. Before the week is over, there will be a special congressional election in Georgia's 6th District for the House of Representatives seat, vacated when Tom Price became HHS Secretary. The Republican candidate Karen Handel is said to be in a virtual tie with her Democratic opponent, despite the fact that a lot of people in Hollywood and others are pouring millions into the campaign. There's a new wrinkle because shortly after the attempted assassination of congressional Republicans, Handel got a threatening letter. You're listening to LibertyNewsDaily.com.
The county sheriff is the first line of defense in preserving the constitutional rights of all citizens. To help your sheriff keep his oath of office, join the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, CSPOA.org.
10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
Who taught you skip stones?
My dad.
Family. Isn't it about time?
He must be good.
Yeah, my mom taught him.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
With Liberty News, I'm Dennis Daly.
When a beer commercial, everyone's happy and they're jumping around and or whatever.
The thing is they not only have appealing activities, they have appealing people out there too. You know, you see beer commercials and it's done with natural water and it's cold brewed or heat pasteurized and all that kind of stuff. They make it sound more like a health food almost, but they never show the hangovers or alcoholism or anything like that.
And then in reality, you're happy, and then you're vomiting in the bathroom, and then you're waking up sick the next morning with a really bad headache.
Any person that says that beer is merely for recreational use is stupid, because it's a form of alcohol.
They just want your money. It's the people that sell the product that are getting the most out of it, not the people that use it.
That's exactly what they're doing. They're all sell our beer, and it doesn't matter what it takes, just sell it.
No, they're not honest messages. They don't show the flip side of it, the results of alcohol.
A public service message from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman, Kurt Crosby, Lowell Nelson on your radio. We're talking about Mercy Otis Warren. Who is she? What has she done? Why is it important? Lowell's breaking it all down just for you, folks. Hang tight. Listen up, Lowell.
Well, thank you, Sam. She is called the most formidable female of the 18th century by historian Lester Cohen. She was a pious and a patriotic woman who would not be kept quiet on matters that would impact her family, and this war certainly would. And she was a historian who appreciated the historical value of a record of the players, the principles, and the progress of the American War for Independence. Now, Sam, you'll like this right here. Mercy, as a child, Mercy was taught that her duty was to her family. She would, her mother taught her, one day be a mother herself, and it was her duty as a Christian woman to raise up a generation of children who would worship God and obey his commandments. Mercy learned these lessons, and the unwavering commitment to her family became a rock upon which she would build her long life. So, especially on the day we honor fathers and mothers, it's helpful to remember that, you know, her start, she had two brothers, you know, and in that day, women were not schooled. You know, they really didn't go to school much. The men did. But she asked her dad if she could listen in on the lessons that her brothers were receiving. And her father, realizing how keen of an intellect she had, agreed. And so she basically audited all of the lessons that her brothers received. And so she gained a fluency in the affairs of history in Rome and Greece, as well as a familiarity with mathematics and science and so forth, which really are the raw materials upon which successful men from notable families built their riches and their reputation. So there you go. She not only was born to a pious and hardworking family, but she had this innate desire to learn history. And she became one of the greatest historians of her day, by the way. Not only was she a playwright, but she was a historian. In fact, she wrote a piece of history, two volumes. It occupied two volumes, but I'll just mention the title here. It's entitled History of the Rise, Progress, and Termination of the American Revolution. And that's available on the Internet today, by the way. I was looking at it last night. It's a digital version. You can pull it right up on the Internet and read to your heart's content. Very interesting history. Now, it turns out that her dad was the famous James Otis, who defended the American patriots in the early days, you know, when in the 1770s, when the writs of assistance became such a burden to the colonists. You will remember that a writ of assistance is an order that permitted British government agents and soldiers to enter and search the private quarters of anybody without a warrant, without any probable cause. They can simply walk into your house and search your cabinets. They can search your closets. They can, you know, with no reason at all, they can just come in and do that. Well, James Otis defended many American patriots against these tyrannical writs of assistance. And so she grew up in a family that bore this resistance, this stubborn resistance to the oppression from the British king. I might mention, Sam, that Mercy Otis Warren was a contemporary of and friends with many of the leading lights here in the patriot movement: Sam Adams, John Adams, George Washington, Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson. They were all corresponding with Mercy and were her friends. And so this is a lady who really had quite a lot of influence. Had you asked me 2 years ago who I thought was the greatest female of the 18th century, I would have said Abigail Adams, because I have heard of her, the impact that she had on John Adams as well as other colonists. And I'm just delighted to add Mercy Otis Warren to my list of notable and remarkable women of the 18th century. Here's a quote, Sam, that you'll really enjoy. It illustrates her passion for writing, her skill in writing, calling to the mind, patriotic fervor and so forth that is necessary to win the Revolutionary War. She says, quote, "America stands armed with resolution and virtue, but she still recoils at the idea of drawing the sword against the nation from whom she derived her origin. Yet Britain, like an unnatural parent, is ready to plunge her dagger into the bosom of her affectionate offspring." End of quote. That's what she wrote in 1775. Now, this was before the shot heard round the world, and she, with other founding fathers, were chomping at the bit to declare independence from Great Britain and to be absolved of the tyranny, the oppressive tyranny of the king, of King George the Third there. And so this is beautiful writing. It's passion writing, Sam. Now, after the war was over, after the Revolutionary War concluded, as we all know, the Treaty of Paris was signed, and the hostilities between the 13 united and sovereign states and Great Britain were over. And I like how the author of this article talks about this. He says the United States would now go forward as a union of 13 republics, republics that would require some sort of constitution sufficient to cement the Confederacy that held them together during the War for Independence. I love reading that paragraph because that's a true characterization or description of the 13 sovereign states. Massachusetts was a sovereign nation. Virginia was a sovereign state, a nation meaning. And the confederation of 13 sovereign independent states was really the beginning of our country. The federal government did not come first, and the states are not administrative units of our central government. It's the other way around. The 13 united and sovereign states, in the plural, created our federal government.
And the whole goal was the sovereign states were to deal with their own internal affairs. The purpose of the federal contract, if you will, the united portion, was to basically say, look, when it comes to negotiating with each other, the federal government can play a role to help us communicate and have congruency inside our federation, if you will, or our group, our United States. And we contract with this federal side to deal with foreign affairs as a United States group. But there were intended to be dual sovereignty here. And the sovereignty given to the federal government with regards to foreign affairs was under a contract. In other words, there was delegation of that authority, not transferring of that authority. That needs to be clearly understood.
Exactly right, Sam. Turns out that Mercy Otis Warren was not a proponent of the proposed Constitution that came out of the convention there in Philadelphia in 1787. She worried that it would, basically she said, we have struggled for liberty and made costly sacrifices at her shrine. And there are still many among us who revere her name too much to relinquish, beyond a certain medium, the rights of man for the dignity of government. She was with Patrick Henry in that cause, Sam Adams. I mean, many of the anti-
And they were fair concerns. Even though we revere the Constitution as akin to Scripture and the political, in my opinion, guideline for our nation, and we adhere to that supreme law of the land, I get the concern. And as Americans are becoming immoral people, we're losing what we hold dear. Their points were well taken.
Absolutely right, Sam. In an essay aimed at exposing the extreme threat to state sovereignty and individual liberties she saw lurking within the vagaries of the Constitution, she wrote a booklet called Observations on the New Constitution and on the Federal and State Convention. And this little booklet featured a full-throated defense of local government, state supremacy, and the rights of all men to consent to the government purporting to rule over them. And so even though she, as a result of her opposition to this proposed Constitution, the Bill of Rights came along. In other words, the anti-federalists were so powerful, they were so strong, and had so much influence that the ratifiers of the Constitution agreed to a Bill of Rights. And so they proposed a number of amendments, I think 12 actually went out, maybe 13, but 10 of those were adopted and became the first 10 amendments to the Constitution.
The bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to learn more about this wonderful leader lady in the Patriot Times, Mercy Otis Warren is her name, and she was a mother, not a soldier. But understand that the pen she wielded in support of liberty was more powerful than any sword. Keep that in mind, because the solution for America resides in the fundamental unit, the family. Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example? Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right? And he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him. And believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32, and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is, you got to take the free test, available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number's 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, LibertyRoundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
All right, back with you live. Lowell Nelson with us, campaignforliberty.org. A wonderful lady if you want to study more about the leaders on the female side of American patriotism. Mercy Otis Warren is her name. Okay, the New American wrote an incredible article about it as well. You can research it and learn about it. Mercy Otis Warren was a mother, not a soldier. But the pen she wielded in support of liberty was incredible and more powerful than many a sword, ladies and gentlemen. And I maintain the fundamental unit of society, the family, men and working together in traditional, God-ordained marriages. That is the key to the restoration of America, folks. And politics is great, but you know what? It's not going to make any difference compared to what the family and true leadership, male and female, created he them qualities can do. They're not adversarial, but complementary, ladies and gentlemen. So to celebrate Father's Day, we actually talk about women. I know that sounds crazy, but folks, they're not adversarial roles. Together, they create this synergistic reality that is the greatest force for liberty ever known on the face of the earth, ordained of God. Any final comments before we move on to your second topic there, Lowell?
No, that's great, Sam. I certainly appreciate the time we've been able to spend there with Mercy Otis Warren. Truly an example of how we can do better as patriots. We can build strong families. I think that's her first legacy, number one
Amen.
Lesson we can take from her to build a strong family with devotion to our God, and then secondarily to the country around us and to preserving the liberties for which so many men and women bled. I just end with this quote right here. She spoke this before the war, but she said, "Notwithstanding the complicated difficulties that rise before us, there is no receding, and I should blush if in any instance the weak passions of my sex should damp the fortitude, the patriotism, and the manly resolution of yours. May nothing ever check that glorious spirit of freedom which inspires the patriot in the cabinet and the hero in the field with courage to maintain their righteous cause and to endeavor to transmit the claim to posterity, even if they must seal the rich conveyance to their children with their own blood." So
there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, a clear example of leadership, of peaceful standing on principle. Speaking of standing on principle, as you know, Jason Chapin is retiring early from the U.S. Congress. I'm disappointed in him for doing so. I think it's nothing but a political move. I'm disappointed in him for doing it. He should have finished out his term and let the elections take place per normal. But no, the Republicans always have to manipulate politics in their favor. He did just that. And Lowell Nelson had the opportunity to attend the special election cycle that took place last Saturday. And he's got an update for us on that score, Lowell.
Thank you, Sam. It was a meeting of the delegates within the 3rd Congressional District, and there are about 1,100 such delegates. Well, we call them state delegates here in the state of Utah, meaning every precinct in the state. There's about 2,000 precincts in the state, and every precinct will elect, you know, neighbors to represent them in these conventions. From those 2,200 precincts in the state of Utah, there were 4,000 state delegates chosen. Now, we have four House districts in the state of Utah, and so basically a fourth of that 4,000 is about 1,000 people, but our 3rd Congressional District is a little bit slightly larger, I guess, than others. And so we had 1,100 delegates, 72% of whom attended this convention last Saturday, so basically 794 delegates were credentialed at the convention. Now, the whole purpose of the convention was to choose a nominee to replace Jason Chaffetz. There were 11 people who came forth to wanting his seat. There are really about, five of the 11 who were what I would call serious contenders. The others, not quite so much. That showed up in the way the elections turned out. you know, the first those five strong ones stayed in through three rounds, whereas the some of the weaker ones, they were eliminated in round one, round two, and round three. And the premier race, the race which caught the most attention throughout the day, and this lasted from 10 in the morning until about 3 in the afternoon, 2 or 2:30 in the afternoon, was between former Representative Chris Herod, a former state representative, and current sitting Senator Deidre Henderson. You know, on the first round, I think Deidre had 202 votes and Chris Herod had 200 votes. And so obviously very close, but they were the ones who were leading the pack. Round four results, Deidre had 301, but Herod had 337. So even though Deidre had an early but very slim lead in the early rounds of voting, Herod came back, and in the final round, Herod received 415 votes, Deidre Henderson 338 votes, and so by almost 100 votes, which is still pretty slim, Chris Herod became the party's nominee to replace Jason Chaffetz in the U.S. House. It was a spirited race. It was a wonderful convention. A lot of good things came of it. And one of the things that I wanted to highlight, Sam, is the fact that there wasn't much money spent. I mean, the candidates had yard signs, not billboards. They had yard signs, and they probably spent, you know, thousands of dollars. But I want to contrast that with the race in Georgia's 6th congressional district between Karen Handel, the Republican candidate, and John Ossoff, the Democratic candidate, where they spent, Wikipedia suggests, a total of $50 million. That's a 50 million. $50 million being spent on that one race, probably the most expensive House election in history, Sam. And here in the state of Utah, where we have a caucus convention a primary system, probably less than $10,000 by all candidates combined was spent. And yet we came out with a candidate who will defend the Constitution, who has a track record, a legislative track record, of voting with the Constitution 82% of the time. I think he could become, if he wins the August primary, now he still has to go up against two other candidates in August 15th primary. Tanner Ainge, the son of the famous basketball player Danny Ainge, is one of the candidates who gathered signatures to be on the primary ballot. And also,
and by the way, this is where the manipulations of the last couple of elections have come to haunt us, because they simply do not have to participate in the early runnings and the real discussions and the vetting that would take place. They can simply circumvent that process. That's what's being done here, right?
Exactly right, Sam. John Curtis, the current mayor of Provo, is the second candidate who gathered he was actually the first one to get this done, but he gathered signatures, and so he has a place on the ballot as well. Now, the whole purpose of the Republican Party convention on Saturday was to identify a candidate to go on to the primary. So this Chris Herod will be on the primary ballot August 15th he'll be one of the three. There will be three candidates: John Curtis, Tanner Ainge, and Chris Herod. And
Chris is the only one that's gone through the early vetting. The others have simply denied the people this process.
Well, that's true of Tanner Ainge. Now, John Curtis actually did go through the convention process, and he received in round four 19 votes. In round three, he received 35 votes. I guess I'm kind of going backwards.
Yeah, but here's what I'm saying, though. Even though he might have participated there, the fact is we rejected him and put somebody else there, but now he gets another, quote, circumventing shot at it.
Yeah, exactly right. Round two, he received 52 votes.
It's kind of like the double jeopardy. They don't like the Bill Cosby trial because he won, and now they're going to try him again.
Yeah, it's that
idea that we just can't let the process work. We cannot be satisfied with the results. We got to challenge everything once again.
Well, see, this is the reason why I'm such a strong advocate for our caucus convention system, as are you, I know, because with a minimum of money, it doesn't take millions of dollars, but plus you get the vetting of the candidates by common, ordinary people like you and me who go nose to nose with these candidates, who ask them the hard questions, and they have to provide substantive answers. They can't just spend oodles of money on television and radio ads hoping to sway the public because they have a nice haircut and a nice name, a popular name. They have to go into these candidate meetings, and they have to have substantive answers to the tough questions that delegates ask. So I'm just reviewing.
And it gets rid of the soundbite mentality and brings it down to a real discussion about liberty and a real vetting of the candidates that we simply lose with this. And I find it tragic, but we'll keep an eye on what happens for that election. The bottom line, though, is Lowell asked very hard questions, and Chris Herod is the guy that Lowell voted for in multiple rounds and who is the leader now. And time will tell what happens with that, I guess, with this new process. We'll still see. It's up for challenge to the last, oodle, if you will, in August. But the sad part in my mind is that these other candidates haven't been vetted well enough, and they won't need to be subject to that vetting really either, as far as I can tell.
Well, it's going to be tough because you have, you know, the population of Republicans in the 3rd Congressional District is, we're not talking hundreds, not thousands now, but tens of thousands of people. And how are those three candidates going to reach tens of thousands of people? They're not going to do it by, you know, door by door. They're going to have to do it by television and radio, and probably most importantly, neighbor to neighbor. And so I highly recommend that people who support Chris Herod and the caucus convention system go door to door in their neighborhoods and recommending and supporting Chris Herod for Congress.
Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. An incredible update from Lowell Nelson. Thank you, sir. Godspeed.
Thank you, gentlemen. Good to be with you.
Lowell Nelson always doing just a stellar job on your radio with us every Monday, with a rare exception when he travels for business or family, etc. Just incredible commentary. CampaignForLiberty.org. Click on Utah to get in touch with Lowell. We're duplicating his efforts in states across the Union. We the people, along with the grace of the Almighty, can and will restore America. We need your help, including financial, at LibertyRoundtable.com. We declare, this nation shall endure.